Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller Podcast for the 28th day of March 2019, a Thursday. For those of you playing the home game and keeping score, I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, and welcome to the show. Apologies, first off, yesterday for the delay in getting the show posted. I don't know what the problem was. I had problems uploading the show. It's technical crap, you don't need to know. But I had problems uploading the show, and then when it was finally uploaded by the morning, it wouldn't feed to any of the apps. And then it was on SoundCloud, but only SoundCloud. Eventually, by about 4 o'clock, I just said to hell with it, because it didn't seem like anything was getting done. And I just reposted the whole damn thing, all the write-up and everything, and then it worked. So, sorry about that. I really liked that episode, too, because I liked the title. I thought of the title long before I ever sat down and recorded the show. Just thought it was kind of funny with Jussie Smollett getting off scot-free, that justice is blind, but it sure has really good gaydar. I thought that was great. I even texted it to Tucker during his show, and he said he loved it. And then, of course, you know, you want to make God laugh, make a plan. So, sorry about that. It's out there now. Yesterday's show, it's still relevant, still good, still has some great comedy in it, too, and discussion of the news. So if you haven't listened yet, listen to it and spread it and share it around. But I apologize. Every once in a while, like, I'm not a technical guy. I use all Apple products. So if it's anything not Apple related, I'm at a loss. I'm recording on an iPad. I send it to my MacBook, and I don't do anything with my iPhone. But yeah. So if it's not really easy to do on a Mac, I don't know what to do. So, but I'm sorry about that. I was getting really pissy with the emails with the tech people at the Daily Caller website, because it seemed like it would be an easier fix. And since I'm not the tech person, I shouldn't have come up with the fix, but it worked out. We got a lot of stuff to get to. As always, you can email the show, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. The signed book contest. I've decided I'm going to give away two this week. Two signed copies of Alienated America by Tim Carney. Email me by noon today, because I've got to go in and record a couple of interviews for Friday, and we'll draw then. So email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Let's get into it. I want to start off with, it involves the Comey interview, it involves the Mueller report, it involves the media. We are watching the slow, painful suicide of the media, the comeuppance that is well deserved, actually. Rachel Maddow, MSNBC, CNN, they saw a massive, massive collapse in their ratings. This is an incredible time in news. Not only is the Mueller investigation come to an end, but there's the Jussie Smollett situation. There's a presidential campaign going on every single day. It's not for lack of things going on. I sit here every day. The show is an hour long, but it takes me, I probably all told, put in 4 hours to get this, because I got to get the audio, I got to cut it up the way I want it, I got to find the stories I want to talk about, I have to familiarize myself with those stories, I have to remember what I know about the past of those stories. I do it over the course of the evening, and then the actual recording takes an hour, editing it takes another 20 minutes, half an hour, and then writing up the post and all that. So it's very time consuming. There are every single day dozens of stories that I just don't have the time to get to. You just can't. The clock runs out. This show would be 12 hours long. The show would be 24 hours long if I got to everything that's going on in the news. And it's not just me. I'm not special. It is everybody who does a podcast, everybody who does a TV show, a radio show, whatever it is. You write a column. When I write my town hall columns, I sit there and I think, it's like looking at a tree, a fruit tree, and being really hungry for an apple. And there's an apple tree, and there's apples all over the place. Which apple do you choose? I guess it's not a perfect analogy, because you just grab a damn apple and eat it. But you get the idea. What are you going to write about? There's so much to choose from. Maybe a better analogy would be some sort of magical tree that grew all kinds of fruit. But what do you choose? What do you write about? How do you pick? And it's a tough decision. I mean, don't cry for me. It's not breaking rocks. It's not roofing, which I've done too much of in my life. But it is an embarrassment of riches. It's a busy time in news. And for two news, supposed news networks, to see a massive, massive drop in viewership, to be slaughtered like the old days by Fox News, is telling. I believe, and I've written about this, I've talked about it on the show, I really think that there is a part of their audience who looked at the last 2 years, and suddenly they wake up and the Mueller report comes out and the president is cleared, and they said, wait, so you were lying to us? What about all the promises that you made? It wasn't speculation. It was speculation, but it wasn't couched as speculation. The speculation that went on CNN and MSNBC from their anchors down to their contributors was not couched as speculation. It was never, I think this could happen, or this might happen, or we might be this and this, that, and the other thing. It was straight up, this is a fact. Here is the truth. We're just waiting for the final shoe to drop. We know this happened, X, Y, and Z. Connect the dots. And suddenly, over the weekend, that was all exposed as being complete and total BS. A giant steaming pile of BS. So obviously, a large percentage of your audience is going to be let down, shall we say, at a bare minimum. I don't think they'll all be gone forever. I don't think that, you know, if you're inclined to believe everything, not just the Mueller stuff, but all the other garbage, the world is going to come to an end in 12 years because of climate change. If you're inclined to believe that, you're not going to walk away. You can't really walk away. It's hard to break up with some truth or some version of reality that you so desperately want to be true. So right now, I think the vast majority of their audience drop, and in some cases it was over 50%, depending on the show and the network. I think a large portion of that is people just retreating to their safe spaces. They do not want to hear about the Mueller report. They do not want to hear that the president of the United States is not being indicted by Robert Mueller for colluding with the Russians or obstructing of justice. They can't handle that. They know it's true, but they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it argued. They don't want to hear it explained. They don't want to hear the Democrats still try to give them a glimmer of hope that maybe the House of Representatives will find something. We're still going to get this guy. It's still going to be a problem. So they've retreated to their safe spaces, to their comfort zones. I imagine there are a lot of latte sipping happening in a fetal position with a series of straws, paper straws probably, under a blanket on a couch in a basement while people silently sob to themselves and curse themselves for having spent $10 on a Robert Mueller prayer candle on Etsy. That being said, the numbers are quite shocking, incredibly shocking. Fox News in prime time just yesterday, or for Tuesday, they had 3.3 million viewers. They averaged 3.3 million viewers. 3.3 million. MSNBC came in second, 1.8 million. It's not as though there is a flood of viewers to Fox News. It's not suddenly the people that watched MSNBC and CNN said, oh my God, I've got to go over to Fox News because they were the only ones not lying for the past 2 years. They just stopped watching news. The numbers at Fox are up a little, but they're not up nearly as much as CNN and MSNBC are down. So you've got Fox News more than doubling. Is that more than doubling? It's about doubling MSNBC in primetime. CNN is a distant third. This number is shocking. 798,000 viewers in prime time on CNN. Not even 800,000. When it gets down, and here's a dirty little secret about television, it's the dirty little secret about radio, it's the dirty little secret about anything having to do with entertainment. If you're over the age of 54, nobody cares. about you. The target demographic is 25 to 54, which is bizarre because at 25, people don't have any money. I'm not sure why you'd advertise a Lexus to somebody who's 25 years old. But in the key demographic, 25 to 54, Fox News had 585,000 viewers. MSNBC came in a distant second again with 271,000 viewers. Double. CNN, not so distant third to MSNBC, with 220,000 viewers. It was a complete collapse across the board. CNN, for the total day, averaged 500,000 viewers. 500,000 viewers for a cable channel that is on every cable provider out there that I'm aware of. Cable, satellite, whatever you got, it's there. It also has massive captive audience in airports across the country and around the world, and they only managed to get 500,000 viewers on average on Tuesday. It was a shocking and stunning collapse. Rachel Maddow usually gets around 2.8 million people. She only got, and I mean, only, I'd kill for these numbers, but 2.3 million people. 500,000 people disappeared from Rachel Maddow's show on Tuesday. Not because it was a slow news day, but because they're sick of being lied to and they're not ready to face reality. Brian Flood, who is a media reporter for Fox News, had a statement from CNN that he posted on Twitter. It's kind of funny for this excuse, because while the audience is in denial, the suits are also in denial. In explaining the Fox News surge, Brian tweeted out this. His name's Brian Flood. Quote, "The president seems keenly aware of cable news rating trends. On the phone with Hannity, he said, I noticed that his friend's ratings were way up while his rivals have dropped. It's true that Fox's primetime ratings have popped this week while CNN and MSNBC's ratings have been below average." You could call that below average. That makes sense. On the right, the Barr letter is being celebrated like a sequel to election night. Since the letter's release on Sunday, there hasn't been much news. So I'm not surprised at the ebb and flow, but I'll be keeping an eye on it. And don't you love that? Oh, it's been a slow news day. Again, you've got Jussie Smollett. You've got Michael Avenatti being indicted on both coasts. There is an overwhelming amount of news, yet they're saying, look, hey, you know, it's kind of a slow news week. It is not a slow news week. The American people are waking up to the realization that they have been lied to by their media. Now they have to decide whether or not they care that they have been lied to. That's the next big hurdle for them to get over. But of course, these networks still had to produce content 24 hours a day. That's just the way it goes. Whether anybody's watching or not, you've got to chug along and put on your show. And last night, CNN did what CNN has been doing. Free advertisement for Democrats running for president to defeat Donald Trump. They will never, ever get off that mission. Well, last night's participant was Cory Booker. And somehow, I would imagine Booker asked for this, or Don Lemon asked for this. The moderator, the host, was Don Lemon. Don Lemon is in a sea of unserious journalists. Don Lemon stands out. Don Lemon and Stephanie Ruhle over at MSNBC are two of the dumbest people in the history of television, not even just cable television. So you've got Don Lemon and his obvious, unhidden, proud partisan hackery hosting a town. At least Jake Tapper pretends to be a journalist. He's a liberal. He's very liberal. It shows through most of the time, but occasionally he does ask liberal serious questions and tries to pressure them to get answers, a la Tim Russert, what Tim Russert used to do with Meet the Press. Don Lemon has no such pretext. He doesn't care. I'm going to play for you a clip here. This is how Cory Booker was introduced by Don Lemon. I don't expect when somebody comes out on stage at a town hall that you beat them over the head with the very first question and try and jump down their throats. It should be sort of an easier question, but you've got an hour with a candidate. You've got an audience there in the theater. You've got an audience, small as it is, on television watching. So you've got commercial breaks you have to get to. You should kind of ease into, get into the issues of the day. This is the first minute of the program. This is the whole first minute. This is Don Lemon's question, an open discussion. By the way, when Booker comes out, it sounds like he's being, he had his name called on The Price is Right. Get on out here. Come on down. They do a handshake and kind of a little hug thing, which is never a good look. If you are supposedly a journalist and you are trying to get serious answers out of a politician, you don't hug them. Yet, that's what happened during this clip. And then listen to, of all the things going on in the world, and in all the things, if you just want to ask a personal question, Cory Booker said that he's dating actress Rosario Dawson. You could have asked him about that. Instead, Don Lemon went even fluffier.
Get on up here. How you doing, brother?
I'm so good to see you.
Thank you. Wow, look at the reception.
Warm body.
You want to sit?
Sure.
So, this is a land of barbecue.
It is.
And you're a vegan.
I am.
What's that like? How's that been for you?
It's been a great experience for me, for well-being. You know, when you come from a family that literally owned a soul food restaurant, my mom and dad, it may have caused some trouble, but now they understand that for health reasons, it's a good way to go.
Yeah, but you know, you're not eating barbecue down here, right? Maybe
no.
Putting a little sauce on the vegetables. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Hey, man, you're a vegan. You're in barbecue country. Huh? What's it like to be a vegan in barbecue country? Well, that's perhaps the most important issue facing the country today, Don. I thank you for that question, and I want to do a little soliloquy on it. Hey, brother, good to see you. And then the bro hug. This is CNN. Now, the questions from the audience were tougher than Don Lemon's questions, but not significantly so. I want to play just part of a question from a woman who had been a nurse for 43 years, she said. Now she finds herself disabled. It's a healthcare question. I want to give you the question, and then, Corey, and then we'll talk about the question. I'll answer the question a little bit, and then we'll get into Cory Booker's answer. And he makes a complete buffoon of himself. There's a great reveal coming up.
After 43 years of working as a nurse, I now find that I'm disabled. My medications and my physician costs are astronomical. I have Medicare and private insurance, but they're expensive, and they still don't cover my cost.
She goes on to ask Booker, essentially, it's a long rambling question, that's why I'm not going to play it. You heard the relevant part, although you don't know it yet. I'll tell you that in a second. She goes on to ask Booker, what are you going to do about that? Every question at these town halls, every single question from journalists is basically, what are you going to do for me? It would have our founding fathers rolling over in their graves. Somebody goes, what will you government do for me? We're going to get out of your way. Your state, you want your state to do something? Knock yourself out. The federal government should not be a factor in your life. That so many people go running to the government. Here's a little thing, because she complains about the cost of her medication. If you're truly poor, if you truly can't afford it, contact the drug manufacturer. Your doctor will likely know a drug rep. Your doctor could have samples that they could give you. The drug rep could put you in touch with the drug company, or you could contact the drug company directly. And they do have free and or reduced medicines for people who truly can't afford their medicines. Despite these commercials that are running all the time about to the drug companies, you're just a profit. There isn't a successful business model that involves your customers dying. And there isn't a good business model that involves people dying for not being able to afford your product, so that word spreads that people, that this evil company is letting people die who can't afford their product. There are plenty. Every drug company in the country gives away their medicine to people who truly, the uninsured, who truly can't afford it. If you really cannot afford it, contact them. contact your doctor. Ask for help. Don't run to a politician. A politician doesn't know a damn thing about your situation, which is why you should talk to your doctor. And they don't know a damn thing about your medication, which is why you should talk to the people who actually make it. You know what the drug companies get out of it? No, they don't really have a warm, fuzzy feeling on their insides if they give somebody their drugs. They get good PR, word of mouth PR. Because there's not going to be anybody taking out ads saying that drug companies give away a lot of their product to help people who can't afford it. But somebody who gets their drugs for a reduced cost or free, they will tell their neighbors and friends about it. Good PR, good word of mouth is the best PR. That's why I start every show asking you to tell a friend, to share the word, to spread the word. I don't have billions of dollars. I don't have millions. I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't have the ability to place ads. You're really all I've got. But drug companies have it all, and they still know, every company knows, that word of mouth beats everything else. So they do those sorts of things. Plus, they're run by human beings, despite what the liberals tell you. It's a liberal who will step over homeless people on their way to work and say, man, the government should really do something about that. Conservatives give more to charity. Personally, even when I was broke, I found myself buying sandwiches for homeless people. I don't give money. It's funny, when I worked at the Heritage Foundation and I was poor and trying to make ends meet and sacrificing instead of, you know, running to government saying, can't somebody subsidize me? There were events at the Heritage Foundation every single day. There were multiple events, some public, some private. They mostly involved food or lunches. We started a thing called Food Club, like 8 of us to raid the food as soon as the meeting was over before it got put down in the break room. But sometimes public events with a couple hundred people, they would have giant platters of Subway, you know, and they're like I guess they're like quarter subs cut up, and there's just piles of them, and they always over ordered. It was always better to have too much than not enough. And this would end up in the break room, and sometimes, you know, nobody would eat it if there was just too much left over. I would buy gallon Ziploc bags and fill them. I would sometimes trek home 3-gallon Ziploc bags filled with Subway sandwiches. And I would, you know, the bread lasts like a day, and then you don't want to use that bread. But the lunch meat, I would peel off the lunch meat. I would make an omelet out of it. I would remake sandwiches out of it. When you're poor, you find very creative ways to stretch what resources you have if you're smart. And that sounded really self-serving, but it's true. Well, on my way to Union Station, which is the train station I would take to take back to Baltimore, because I had to live in Baltimore because I couldn't afford to live in D.C. and have an hour train ride, I'd walk past homeless people all the time. And every once in a while, they would hit me up for money on a day when I had Ziploc bags full of Subway. And they'd say, man, can you give me $1 so I can get a sandwich? And I'd go, No, but I can give you a sandwich. And I would usually just whip out one of the gallon bags because it was tough to get through that much Subway. And I would offer them, like, there's probably 8 sandwich pieces in there. And they would get the most confused look on their face. They'd look at you like, I can't get high off this. This ain't crack. I can't smoke this. But they would take it. Very confused. Maybe they resold it. Maybe they ate it. They might have just thrown it out. Who the hell knows? But they would all get very confused when they'd hit you up for money so they could get a sandwich. And I said, we'll cut out the middleman. Here you go. Here's a sandwich. It was always funny to me. Anyway, off on a tangent. Let's listen to the lady. You heard the lady's question. What are you going to do about health care? Here is Cory Booker's part of his answer.
This is a broken system, and we must fix it. And so if I'm your president, I'm going to make sure that we deal with this. Now, the ideal in our country is that everyone should have access to health care. Health care is an American right. And the current system is definitely wrong.
Oh, the current system is definitely wrong. And health care is an American right. Health care is not a right. I'm not breaking news here. Health care is a service provided by people who spent a very long time and a lot of money getting educated to be able to provide that service, not just the doctors, but the nurses, the administrative staff. Everybody involved in your health care has spent a lot of money and time on their education. And doctors, despite what they say, oh, I just wanted to help people. You're not doing it for free. You're not, maybe Doctors Without Borders people. Most of the doctors, they want to help people, but they also want to make a pretty good living. So they go into medicine. If healthcare is a right, then they have to basically provide you with their service, their expertise, for nothing. What business do you have charging somebody for their right? And you can certainly not deny anybody. You can't pay. You refuse to pay. You're not going to pay. It is my right to do this. A right does not involve the forced servitude of another human being. Healthcare is decidedly not a right. This is why the right and the left can't get together on this. They can't do what is necessary when it comes to healthcare, because one side is lying. They know it is not a right. You cannot make it, you cannot force somebody to perform a service or provide goods to other human beings because it is their right. That's not how rights work. But they don't care. It sounds good. You heard the applause. The applause, I cut the applause out. The applause goes on for quite a while. Democrat audiences absolutely love this idea that healthcare is a right because they are stupid. They don't understand how things work. They don't understand the dangerous slippery slope that, again, if healthcare is a right, if the government provides you your rights, if the government is supposed to protect your rights, not provide your rights. There are very explicit rights with which you are born. But if a government can decide, well, healthcare is a right, then why not a car? An electric car, considering we're killing the planet, and we've only got 12 years left to live, then and people need to get around, then isn't an electric car a right? Certainly a necessity. It goes down an incredibly stupid slippery slope pretty quickly if you accept the concept and just take it out to a ridiculous degree. Food is a right. Housing is a right. And these are things that Democrats actually say. Education is a right. Well, of course you have your public education. You're educated until you're 17 or 18 years old, right through the 12th grade. What you do with it after that, if you continue it, that's up to you. But no, they say that college is a right. Housing is a right. Well, Jimmy Carter's in his 90s. He's approaching 95. He can't drive that many nails to build houses for people who don't have their own houses. We're going to have to really rethink that one, Democrats. Food. Farmers can't give away their products. That is not the way that they would be able to maintain their farms. Grocery stores cannot give away their products. What they really mean to say on something like food is a right. They talk about food insecurity. We have a massive obesity problem in this country, but people go to bed food insecure. This is like the Obama statistic of jobs saved or created. They didn't have any jobs created, so they cooked up the saved or created, and then they could just say, we saved every job in the country, so we've got millions of jobs that we've saved or created. That's like saying, I've just saved your life because I've decided not to push you down a flight of stairs. You didn't really save somebody's life. You didn't really save a job. But of course, that statistic went unquestioned. When it comes to what they talk about, to just use the food example, food should be a right. Good, nutritious food should be a right. That means food stamps. That means welfare payments. We should give people money so that they can go and buy things. Well, that's not really how a right works. And if that's how rights work, then why are they desperately clamoring to make the exercise of your Second Amendment rights, which are in fact guaranteed and enshrined in the Constitution unambiguously, why are they trying to make that so expensive? They're taxing the purchase of the gun. They're pressuring banks to not allow transactions with gun sellers or gun manufacturers, to not allow gun manufacturers to bank with them. They're taxing bullets. They're putting restrictions on and requiring licenses for purchasing 100 rounds, which you can go through pretty quickly at a shooting range. And they're saying you have to go through a background check in California. Every time you want to purchase, you can buy 100 rounds a day, I think it is. And you have to go through a criminal background check every single day for every single purchase of a bullet, which costs money. So who gets hurt by that when you make things cost more? It isn't rich whitey. It's poor and minorities who get screwed by that. Democrats are screwing them and telling them that they're doing it for their own good. And sadly, so many people are going, oh, well, thank you for that. Thank you, sir. May I have another? This concept that the government is the provider of your rights is incredibly dangerous because, and it bears repeating it, even though I say it all the time, if I were to get a tattoo, which I never would, it would be something along the lines of, if a government grants you your rights, there's no rationale, there's no justification against a government taking them away. If the government provides them, then the government can take them away. The way our government was set up, the way our Constitution and the Bill of Rights are written, and the amendments to the Constitution, to this point anyway, are that you were born with these rights, and the government can't mess with them. The government is, in fact, supposed to protect them. They don't anymore, but it's supposed to. Anyway, Cory Booker was not done rambling about health care. And what he says next contains a little nugget. If you remember back to the question, don't worry, there won't be a test, and I will play a short clip of the question again to make this point. I just want to illustrate how ditzy, how clueless Cory Booker is, and the audience. I might be the only person on the planet who picked up on this. I've tweeted it out. So if you follow me on Twitter, you've probably already seen this. And so wherever else you hear it today, I thought of it first. I realized it first, and it may well come from me. But listen to the rest of Corey's answer.
I believe the best way to get there is by having Medicare for all.
Did you catch it? Did you pick up on it? Of course, I want Medicare for all. That's Bernie Sanders. That's actually all of them. They want socialized medicine. They want a single-payer health system, which would be a disaster in this country. It would be incredibly expensive, and the only way to control costs would be through price controls and rationing. Both of those would drive physicians from the medical field, which would then only increase wait times, which is part of rationing. It's incredibly dangerous. But did you catch it? Remember the woman's question and her setup and her preamble and telling her situation, how bad she has it, even though she, well, let's listen to her, just that little bit of it again.
My medications and my physician costs are astronomical. I have Medicare.
She has Medicare. She has Medicare. So what, she also said she had private insurance, some kind of supplemental, probably from being a nurse for 43 years as part of her pension. But she has Medicare. So Cory Booker's solution to this woman's dire situation, as she laid it out, and I don't know if it's true or not. It seems unlikely, but it could be possible. Cory Booker's answer to a woman who's on Medicare and can't afford her treatment is,
I believe the best way to get there is by having Medicare for all.
So he told a woman who's on Medicare, who says that it's still not enough and it's bad and she can't afford it, that the solution to her problem is more people in Medicare. How does that address her? It doesn't address her, not even remotely. I think the solution to your problem is to put you exactly in the position you're in right now. Nobody, you know, a real moderator would have said, hey, excuse me, Senator, but she's on Medicare. How does Medicare help her? Medicare Part A pays about 80% of your medical bills, leaving you on the hook for the other 20%. She then said that she has private health insurance. It's generally supplemental health insurance that you pay a premium that picks up the other 20% or a large chunk of the other 20% and some other things. Some people buy dental, vision, whatever it is. It's irrelevant. We're talking in broad strokes here. Specifics are different for everybody. She says she can't afford her care as it is and her medicine as it is. And Cory Booker's solution for her is using a whole bunch of buzzwords. And his answer was very long. It sounded like a series of bumper stickers. It was like if you were playing the license plate game, but reading bumper stickers as you drove through San Francisco or something. And Medicare for all, healthcare is a right, this, that, and the other thing. Drug companies are evil. He says the solution to her problem is what she's describing as her problem. And the audience, like a bunch of trained barking seals, applauded on cue. Oh, he's sober. Medicare for all. Yes, that is the solution to this woman's on Medicare's problem. If Medicare for all, then, okay, it's already ridiculously expensive for the people who are on Medicare. You put everybody on Medicare, it becomes incredibly, incredibly expensive. And then what do you do with the people who can't afford their 20%, their end of the 20%? Well, then you've got to pick up 100%. But since we're not allowed to stigmatize people suckling the government teat, that's, of course, why we have credit cards instead of food stamps. They're called like independence cards here in Maryland. It's a codependent card, but they don't want people to feel the stigma that comes along with being on welfare, which they absolutely should. A stigma is an incredible motivator. You should be embarrassed to be on public assistance. It might help you get off your ass and get off public assistance. And lo and behold, guess what'll happen? Your life will be better. Well, Democrats aren't interested in that. Democrats aren't interested in the details in healthcare and how they're going to go from picking up 80% of Medicare's cost, which is the biggest line item in the budget every year, to 100% of the medical costs for 100% of the country. Because they're promising free everything. Free this, free that, free this, free that. And then what do you do to the doctors? Because the only way to get there is to tell them that nice, big, fat salary that they're earning for saving people's lives is going to be cut in half or a quarter. You're going to get next to nothing. But on the plus side, you get to feel real warm and fuzzy inside because you are now serving other people's rights. Congratulations. There will be a huge dropout rate in medical schools. Applications will drop significantly, which will mean that standards will have to be lowered to keep the supply of doctors necessary. You can see how it snowballs into a complete shit system. Excuse my French, but there is no better word for it than that. Anyway, I thought that was funny. Well, the solution to your problem is your problem. And Don Lemon's just sitting there going, oh, God, he's dreamy. This is awesome. I love it. Can you believe he's vegan, ladies and gentlemen, in barbecue country? As they were going to commercial one of the times, this will tell you again how bad CNN is. This clip is mostly funny, but it's illustrative of how the media and the Democratic Party are symbiotic. You'll hear Don Lemon throw to commercial. They're going to a break. And then you're going to hear an open mic moment because Don Lemon is an idiot who, even though he does this for a living, doesn't seem to remember that he's wearing a microphone that is live and it's picked up on camera. And what he says tells you everything you need to know about the journalism of today.
We're going to be right back with more from CNN's Democratic Presidential Town Hall with Senator Cory Booker live from Orangeburg, South Carolina. So make sure you stay with us. Nice job.
Chest bump. Nice job. Oh, man, you're nailing it, Corey. You're doing it just like we did in rehearsal. It's awesome. Oh, CNN is a serious news outlet, however. Don't ever doubt it, or Brian Stelter will be unleashed in your dreams. What a scary thought. The human potato coming at you naked. One more clip from Cory Booker, because This is just too funny. And it's, again, it's about the vote in the Senate yesterday on the Green New Deal. Of course, Cory Booker is one of the every Democrat running for president in the United States Senate endorsed the Green New Deal, which is a resolution, a high-minded resolution, as they say, about what the country should aspire to when it comes to saving our planet from the scourge of climate change, which is BS. But he, like every other Democrat, well, not every other Democrat, there are actually four Democrats, they don't get talked about that much, it's weird, who voted in against the Green New Deal. They actually said no, they opposed it. And one of them was Kyrsten Sinema out of Arizona, who, it surprised me, she released a statement saying this is a bad idea and I want to focus more on bringing jobs to Arizona. I was shocked at that because she ran kind of as a loon, and there's a lot of clips of her as a loon. But maybe she's not going to be all that loony. But Joe Manchin was another one. There were a couple of other Democrats. Doesn't matter who they are. Every other Democrat voted present. They refused to vote for what they openly said they supported. And their rationale is as dumb as you would expect. And Cory Booker, being the Spartacus of stupid, is no different.
The Green New Deal.
Yes. Okay, just this week in the Senate, the vote came up. You voted present instead of yes. And I know that members of your party say
we all joined together
that Mitch McConnell is playing politics with the vote. So if you support it, then why not just vote yes?
Because I don't need to play on Mitch McConnell's terms, who until recently failed to even admit that there was a crisis. And the cynicism that they're showing by not putting real plans on the Senate floor to deal with this crisis, things, again, that Americans agree on. So much I'm trying to remind people in this campaign that we have common pain, be it climate change or health care, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, we have a common pain, but we've lost our sense of common purpose. Mitch McConnell is not showing any ideas that are unifying our the Senate to move forward when there's a lot of territory to do that. I will not play his cynical political games. Okay. I'm going to be a leader that actually puts real solutions into legislation to deal with the climate crisis.
All right, Senator.
He's a co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. But he's not going to vote for it because Mitch McConnell called for a vote on it. Does any of this make any sense? I'm not going to play this cynical game. Again, it go back to the homeless guys I used to give bags of sandwiches to. See, it seems as though at the time I was just saying that to make it sound like I was really a cool guy who carries around bags of sandwiches. So if you're ever near me, you can hit me up for a sandwich. No, there's a point to it. You give the homeless guy a sandwich, he's asking for a sandwich. Can you give me money to get a sandwich? Well, here, in fact, is a sandwich. Here's a whole bunch of sandwiches. You can eat these for 2 days, probably. Keep it in the shade. It'll keep for 2 days. Just seal up the bag real good, and you'll be not begging. You can do something else with your time or whatever. You don't have to worry about food for the next 2 days. And they didn't want it. They really just wanted the money. They really just wanted the drugs. Cory Booker and the Democrats want the issue. They want to be able to try and say the Republicans are denying this climate disaster and we're all going to die and it's all because of them and that's why you must vote for Democrats across the board. They had exactly what they said they wanted and they refused to vote for it. And their stupid excuse, their lame excuse, their unbelievable excuse, because it's a lie, is, well, I'm not going to vote on it on his timetable. We didn't even have hearings about it. You wrote the damn thing. Why did you write something that was incomplete? Why did you write something that won't address the issue sufficiently? Why would you support this if you don't actually support this? Why would you say you support this if, when given the chance, you pass on it? You don't want to vote on it because they want, just like immigration. Oh, the poor, sweet, sweet, nourishing dreamers and the sweet, sweet, sweeter, nourishing illegal aliens in general. They're our moral betters, our moral superiors. They're more American than you are. They're apple pie squared. Democrats had absolute and complete control of Congress and a filibuster-proof majority in the United States Senate in Barack Obama's first 2 years as president. They could have passed anything they wanted. What did they not do? They did not even hold a vote on immigration reform, on granting amnesty, on just protecting the sweet, sweet, nourishing dreamers. Not a single bit of it. Now, they're all running around as if it's an absolute moral imperative that we do something to protect the Dreamers. But when it comes to building a few miles of wall in exchange for protecting these Dreamers, they're not interested. Because if you solve the problem, or if you get what you say you want, guess what you can't do the next election cycle? You can't run on scaring the crap out of people about how you have to elect them so they can do this, or they can protect you from the other side who wants to do that. It is an incredibly cynical joke. I'm a cynical person. I'm a cynical person by nature. I'm a smartass by nature. I think you've picked up on that. But this is beyond the pale for me. This is unbelievable. I will not vote for what I swore up and down I supported because I do not support the manner in which it was put forward. Is also the other argument is this is just a non-binding resolution and a statement of principles. This is not addressing the problem. Then why did you wholeheartedly endorse it? Why did you add your name to it as an author and a co-sponsor? If it is an exercise in masturbatory politics, why did you line up for it and come out and full-throatedly say you endorse this? All of them. This isn't just a question for Cory Booker. It's for all of them. If it does nothing, then where is your legislation? If it does nothing, then why have you called it an important thing that we must embrace? If it does nothing, why aren't you out there with something then? Because they're full of crap. They know they're full of crap. They know this is an issue designed explicitly and created expressly to scare the hell out of people and not actually a problem that is requiring addressing. And sadly, the audience of barking seals out there, you heard, well, I'm not going to play Mitch McConnell's game. And they're all like, oh, clap, 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 clap. Mitch McConnell's game is giving you everything you want. And you're like, nope, nope, I'm not interested. I'm not going to take everything I want. I refuse to take everything I want. Who's the cynical one here? I'm not going to play Mitch McConnell's cynical game. You are, Democrats. Speaking of cynical and Democrats, she's back. Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She went on a very long rant. I have just like a minute and a half of it, but it's kind of funny. Yesterday in the House, there was a hearing on climate change, blah, blah, blah. She is, of course, the brains, the brains behind the Green New Deal, which is not new, and it's not a deal for anybody, and it mostly doesn't deal with environmentalism. It's mostly about socialism and healthcare for all and jobs for all and taxes on everything, government control for all. She, Congressman Sean Duffy, pointed out how this is really an elitist dream. Well, everybody's got to retrofit their houses and put solar panels on there and get windmills and everything like this and buy a bunch of hamsters and put them in wheels to run and power their houses. People will get rich off of this, and rich people support this because they can afford this. It'll drive up the cost of energy for everybody, as Barack Obama said in 2008 in that editorial board meeting, I think, with the Philadelphia newspaper, that under his plan, energy costs will necessarily skyrocket. They want energy costs for electricity generated through coal, generated through fracking, generated any other way except nuclear. They don't want nuclear, even though that's the cleanest. Zero emissions. They're against nuclear. They really just hate Western civilization, and they want to stop it. They think that the U.S. being so prosperous is the problem for the rest of the world, and it's unfair, so they want to kneecap our own system. They can also then seize a lot more control when there's trouble because people are desperate to look for some way out of it. And they'll turn to government, as we see every single day at every one of these town halls. Well, they don't actually want this to become law. And the meeting, in the hearing, and the markup in the House, Congressman Duffy pointed out how, yeah, of course rich liberals will do this. They can afford it. But when it comes to poor people, the people that the Democrats swear they champion, but then routinely screw over, they can't afford this. They're going to screw them over. So it's a feel-good measure for elitist liberals and it really screws the poor. Well, AOC was very, very upset by this. And she, if you ever see the video, it's been out on social media, she turns into Beto O'Rourke. A lot of gyration, slamming around and moving of her hands. But she goes off on a rant here.
This is not an elitist issue. This is a quality of life issue. You want to tell people that their concern and their desire for clean air and clean water is elitist? Tell that to the kids in the South Bronx, which are suffering from the highest rates of childhood asthma in the country. Tell that to the families in Flint, whose kids have their blood is ascending in lead levels. Their brains are damaged for the rest of their lives. Call them elitist. You're telling them that those kids are trying to get on a plane to Davos? People are dying. They are dying.
Now, I could play more of that, but I don't want to inflict that much stupidity on anybody. What she fails to mention is the kids in the Bronx with the most asthma everywhere. People are dying, and Flint has lead in the water. These are Democratic strongholds, ladies and gentlemen, generationally controlled by Democrats. Generationally controlled by Democrats. So when the feces hit the fan, who do you think turned the fan on and flung the feces? It was Democrats. The old mayor, the former mayor of Flint, was the one who decided that they needed to switch the water from the Detroit River to the Flint River because, oh, it's going to be cheaper, and let's not think about what there could be bad consequences in doing that. Let's not do any studies. Let's just do it. It's so important. We must move forward. And she makes a hell of an argument against living in major cities. The pollution in major cities, why does Nebraska, why does Montana, why does Arizona have to upend the way that they get energy and pay a lot more for that energy because of the car exhaust in the Bronx? See, because Democrats, they, you know, think globally, act locally. No. They think locally and act globally all the time. There's a problem here in this area, so we must upend the entire system. It's the Obamacare argument. There's a very small percentage of perpetually uninsured people in this country, about 15 million people, between 15 and 30, depending on which set of numbers you need. The chronically uninsured, meaning they're uninsured for 2 years or more. We could, I don't know, address them. I still don't think we should have done that, but we could have freed up the states to do that. There are plenty of solutions that would have been constitutional to get the government out of the way and let the states figure out how to do it. Instead, they used that opportunity to seize the entire health insurance market. Now the government decides what your health care plan has to be. They're not providing it yet. That's the next step. But they decided what you needed. They don't know who you are, except for when it comes to filing your taxes, and they don't care who you are, except if you don't file your taxes. But they had to impose a massive solution on a realistically small problem. Instead of a scalpel, they used a shotgun. And it's the same thing with the Green New Deal. If there's a problem with the air quality in the Bronx, and I don't know if it's true what she's saying about the Bronx or not, then maybe the Bronx should address it. Maybe the area surrounding the Bronx should address it. But I guarantee you it's not because a cow farted in Iowa that the kids in the Bronx are getting asthma. I guarantee you that. It has nothing to do with somebody driving an SUV in Texas that the water in Flint is full of lead. Nothing to do with it whatsoever. It has to do with local decisions and local actions. But you can't say that. It's probably a hate crime that I even did. If I cared, I wouldn't have said it. But I don't care what these people think. I'm more interested in the truth. So, yes, little AOC, she was very, very upset that somebody would point out that maybe we shouldn't upend the entire country to fulfill your fever dreams of having complete and total government control of over everything. Speaking of complete and total government control over everything, New Zealand. Remember the mosque shooting down there? It's weird how that's been wiped off the news. Horrible situation. Terrorist attack down there, 50 people murdered. Well, they don't follow up on it because what happens after these things is people begin to get some perspective. Governments overreacting, and it's never pretty. The government of New Zealand has banned the manifesto from the shooter. Did you know that there's an office of censorship in New Zealand? There really honestly is a office of censorship in, there's a guy named David Shanks. He is the, and this is his job title. It's not, you know, some right winger making it up and saying what he really does. They nailed this one on the nose. He is the chief censor of New Zealand. And he has deemed the manifesto objectionable, which makes it illegal to possess it, illegal to distribute it. There are two people, at least in New Zealand, who are currently facing real jail time for having posted it on their social media. Even as a cautionary tale, this is what the lunatic said. It is against the law down there while they're trying to seize guns. And in anticipation of the gun seizure, the government, of course, representing the people, has called on citizens to turn in their firearms in the name, of course, of justice. They'd done nothing wrong. They were law-abiding citizens before. They're law-abiding citizens now. But the government wants their guns. Well, so far, out of 1.2 million guns, roughly estimated, there have been 37 turned into authorities. It seems as though even in New Zealand, the people are not in such a gigantic hurry as to want to surrender their rights to government because some piece of human garbage abused theirs and did something awful. 37 guns turned in out of an estimated 1.2 million. But in the media here, when the announcement was made that they were going to ban guns, they're so progressive. And there's no uproar about this. And the people of New Zealand and the government, their representatives, they're acting. And we should be more like them. Maybe we're more like them, or they're more like us than our liberal friends were willing to admit. Oh, and by the way, this story. Again, why the media stopped talking about New Zealand. This is from the tower.org, New Zealand. The chairman of New Zealand's biggest mosque told a rally attended by thousands in the city of Auckland on Saturday that Israel's intelligence agency Mossad was behind the terrorist attack at two Christchurch mosques that left 50 people dead. Sounds absurd. I didn't necessarily believe it. I thought the headline was a little bit sensational, but there was a video.
I will not mince words. I stand here and I say I have a very, very strong suspicion that there is some group behind him, and I am not afraid to say I feel Mossad is behind this.
Is that true? Israel's behind it!
Yes, those damn sneaky Jews are behind the mosque shooting. I thought it was a white supremacist. I thought it was a white nationalist. I thought he was inspired by Trump, but now it turns out that he was inspired and funded and plotted by Mossad. Mossad did the shooting. This guy seems like a real winner. Next thing you know, he'll be moving to the United States and be elected to Congress as a Democrat. It's only a matter of time. Speaking of Democrats, James Comey is dealing with loss of his credibility. He appeared on NBC Nightly News last night talking to Lester Holt, got kind of a softball interview, about the Mueller report, because this all came about because of James Comey's plotting. He should face charges for the minimum leaking government, stolen government property, his memos. But he's not willing to accept what Mueller had to say.
Then there was your firing. May 3rd, 2017, you go before the Senate Judiciary Committee. You talk about a lot of things, the Clinton email server, but you decline to answer questions specifically about evidence of collusion at that point. A couple of days later, you're fired. A few days after that, I sit down with President Trump. He says, when I decided to just do it, talking about firing you, I said to myself, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. What did you think when you heard that?
I thought that's potentially obstruction of justice, and I hope somebody is going to look at that. Again, the president appears to be saying, I don't know what's in his head, which is why I can't reach the conclusion. What he appears to be saying is, I got rid of this guy to shut down an investigation that threatened me.
Oh, the pomposity. How arrogant this guy is. I'm surprised he's able to leave the bathroom in the morning, because once he catches a glimpse of himself in the mirror, I imagine the urges to do gross things are just overwhelming. But he wasn't done.
The president is taking the Mueller news as complete vindication.
It was just announced. There was no collusion with Russia.
He's making it based on a pretty bold claim in that four-page letter we got from Attorney General Barr, that there was no coordination, there was no collusion. The language was pretty clear. There was nothing between this campaign and Russia. So on that basis, should he be breathing a sigh of relief?
I don't know that I read the letter from the Attorney General that way. I read him as saying the special counsel didn't find that the evidence established that there was any conspiracy between an American and the Russians. What other evidence there is, what evidence there might be that falls short of that standard, I have no idea.
Established is the word that you're honing in on there?
Correct. And so I don't know what the special counsel found, and I'm prepared, I hope everybody is, to wait and get the transparency that we need.
He and the Democrats just can't let this go, because you remember the book by James Frey, I don't know, probably 10 years ago now, called A Million Little Pieces. It was supposedly an autobiography. It is autobiographical memoir, whatever you want to call it, of this guy who had had a trouble growing up, troubled youth, drug use, violence, crime, blah, blah, blah. And it was a huge bestseller. Oprah gave it the stamp of approval. And then it turned out, as people decided after it had sold a couple million copies, that we should look into some of these more sensational claims. And it turns out that he had made a lot of it up and embellished a lot more of it, that it wasn't actually true. Well, there was outrage. Simon & Schuster, the publisher, I believe it was Simon & Schuster, they put a note in all future editions saying this isn't really accurate, this isn't true, we're sorry about that. And then they ultimately decided that anybody who was offended that they had been sold a bill of goods could return their books that they purchased under the guise of it being a true story. They could return their books for a refund, and a bunch of people did. I wonder if James Comey is worried that he'll have to give refunds on his book, which sold a couple of million copies and made him a very rich man, or richer man. Same with all of the other leftists that you see on TV, the David Corns, the Malcolm Nances, the people who swore up and down that there was Russian collusion and wrote books about it and sold hundreds of thousands, if not millions of copies of their books. And now we know that it was a lie. Maybe that's why they refuse to accept reality. It's just kind of weird to see Mr. Self-Righteous James Comey sitting there and refusing to accept reality. Then again, when you tried to construct an alternate reality and it just imploded on itself, I can see why you might be down with that. Anyway, that is all the time we have today. Like I said, time flies, and I didn't get to half of the stuff I wanted to get to, but we got a full hour together, and I appreciate it. We'll have another hour together tomorrow. We'll see you then.
This is a land of barbecue.
It is.
And you're a vegan.
I am.
What's that like?